Thanks to LinkedIn for supporting the Productivity Show. LinkedIn Jobs matches people to your role based on more of who they really are, their skills, interests, even how open they are to new opportunities. For $50 off your first job post, go to linkedin.com/TPS. That's linkedin.com/TPS. Terms and conditions apply. Welcome to the Productivity Show, the Asian efficiency podcast dedicated to helping you make the most of your time, energy, and attention. Today, Brooks and I continue the conversation that Tan and I began last week on the T framework, a simple mental model to help you identify which levers to pull to get unstuck and help you reach your full potential. Today, we dive deep on the first pillar of the T framework, explain the three parts of making the most of your time, give you guiding questions to help you identify where you can make improvements, and give you several resources to help making the necessary changes even easier. At the end of today's episode, we give simple and practical action steps to help you stop spinning your wheels and start making the most of your limited time. You can find links to everything that we share in the show notes by going to theproductivityshow.com/219. And now, on with the show. Hey everyone, this is Mike Schmitz, and with me to talk about the first pillar of productivity is Mr. Brooks Duncan. How are you doing today, Brooks?
Excellent. How are you?
Doing well. So as I mentioned in the intro, this is a continuation in our T framework series. So last week, Tan and I talked about the T framework in general, and for the next couple weeks, we're going to be diving deep into these specific areas. We're going to tackle them one at a time. So if you want to go back and understand the whole framework, I definitely recommend the previous episode, which is TPS 218. And we're also going to have some blog posts and things where we explain this and how these things all tie together. But in this episode, what we want to do is we want to go into the first pillar here and really dissect this. Just real briefly from last time, we talked about the T framework. Basically, it's time, energy, and attention. And these are the three areas where when we work with people to solve their productivity problems, basically they fall into one of these areas. And so maybe you've got time to work on your big project, but you don't have any energy. Okay, you're not going to make any progress. Or maybe you've got time and energy, but you get distracted all the time. So you still can't make any progress. So there's a lot of value here in figuring out what are the right levers for you to pull to produce the results that you want. There's a bunch of different scenarios that we talked about in the previous episode, all the different combinations and things like that. But like I said, what we want to do in this episode is dive deep into the first pillar of productivity, which is time. You ready to do this, Brooks?
Yeah, and this is really the best place to start, because what we tend to find is this is where people have their initial challenges. They feel that they can't progress farther to the rest of the stuff they want, the rest of their goals, because they always feel like they don't have time. So I'm really glad that we're starting with the T in T.
Yeah, exactly. So when people first come to Asian efficiency or they're first getting into productivity, this is really the place to start. You know, when you're first starting on your productivity journey, this is the most obvious sign that something is wrong, that you don't have time to do the things that you want to do, the things that you know are important, but kind of always fall through the cracks because X, Y, and Z. There's all these different excuses or reasons why you don't have the time to do the things that you really need to do. So time is about creating the margin in your day so that you can take action on those things that are important, but maybe not urgent. You can kind of flip the script. You can stop living in the tyranny of the urgent, and you can set aside the time to do the things consistently that'll get you unstuck, reaching your full potential, create your ideal future. So time is really all about manipulating the systems that are in your life to make them as efficient as possible so that you have the time to do those things. And there's three components to this: systems, strategies, and people. Let's maybe look at systems first.
Yeah, and systems is something we talk a lot, especially on the blog. So if you check out the show notes, you'll see there are some links to articles that we're going to touch on in a little bit. What you find when you go and you look into this stuff is systems are everywhere. Every part of your life is composed of a series of what we say is interdependent and independent systems.
Yeah, exactly. And we'll have a bunch of links in the show notes, which will give you some additional resources into these different different topics, but one article in particular that I want to call out is the systems thinking article, which I updated not too long ago. And there's some great visuals in here that really help solidify this. And just real briefly, I want to explain how this works. So really, you were talking about independent interdependent systems, Brooks, which I think is great. But the question then is, well, what actually is a system? Okay, and a system is really, you've got an input, it goes through a process, and then you get an output. And there's some general principles that pertain to these systems that article highlights, like systems are there whether you realize them or not. This was a big tipping point for me, light bulb moment, when I read Work the System by Sam Carpenter, because he makes that point that these systems are there. And really, when you recognize that these systems are there, when you get above and slightly outside your current situation, you can recognize these systems, you can manipulate them to produce the results that you want. And then also, maybe people are really frustrated with their situation and they're thinking to themselves, well, I've got a whole lot of work to do with my systems. If you were to break down all the different systems in your life, it's really probably not as bad as you think it is, because systems function correctly 99.9% of the time. But those unmanaged systems will produce those random bad results. And so it's identifying which systems need to be addressed and then making small changes to those systems that will produce the results that you're looking for.
Yeah, this stuff can be really addictive too. Once you start thinking about this, you start seeing systems everywhere. So you could be waiting for the subway or something like that, and there's a delay, and your mind just starts wandering and starts thinking, okay, what are the systems failures here? What could they do better? And you kind of look at your work and your life that way too. It kind of like what we talk about sometimes about stepping outside of yourself. You tend to do that when you start doing systems thinking too, because you might have a situation in family, you know, your kids aren't getting to school on time or something like that. And you start thinking to yourself, okay, what's the system going on here, and where is it going off the rails a little bit? And then you can really narrow down and fix it. Or if it's not broken, but you want to make it better, you can start seeing the point at which you can focus on and improve it too.
Yep. And another resource for this whole idea of systems, actually an episode, I think that you and I recorded together, episode 174, where we're talking about Think Like a Geek. Again, in that systems thinking article, there is a visual here, but it compares how a geek approaches a problem and a non-geek approaches a problem. And you could put in there productivity enthusiast as well. So basically, the tipping point here is the moment that you realize that a system is broken. Okay, when you get annoyed with that broken system, then you figure out a solution. It takes some effort. It takes some work, some additional work. And for a while, it may look like you're losing. Okay, it may look like you're wasting more time trying to address this system. But then once you figure out the solution to the system and you implement it in an efficient way or even an automated way, then in the long run, you make up for it. And so that's the important thing to realize here, is that when you're addressing systems in your life, it is going to take a little bit of additional work up front, but it's going to provide long-term benefits if you stick with it.
Yeah, Think Like a Geek sounds like the title of a podcast I would record, so it must have been me.
Yeah. There's a couple examples of systems for people. So GTD is probably a very common system, and we've got different podcast episodes on that. What a lot of people like about GTD when they first come to it is that it's got this very visual diagram, and it's very straightforward as to when something comes into your point of view, into your inbox, you know exactly what you're supposed to do with it. I do think that GTD in particular maybe hasn't held up so great over the years, and there's some holes in the system, but it's a great starting point if you've never really embraced the systems thinking. For a lot of people who all of a sudden they've got a workflow that they can follow when they're cranking through the messages in their inbox, this is a game changer.
Yeah, in my corporate days, when I first started getting into this stuff and I became a GTD convert, I had a diagram. It's funny that you say that about a diagram, because I had a diagram that I got somewhere off the web, I don't know where, and I printed it out and I had it on my cubicle wall right beside my computer screen, and I referred to it all the time as I was going through and getting good at this stuff. So having a system that you can follow instead of having to make decisions or come up with things to do all the time is really, really helpful.
Yep. Another example of a system would be something like the 12-week year. And again, you can dive deep on this topic. We've actually got a 12-week year training module in the dojo, which is a short video course, including all the resources to help you get up and running with implementing this. Brandon Wentland came on the podcast too, and we talked about this, but he did a great job with that video course, in my opinion. There's also a resource in the forum. Somebody put together this crazy spreadsheet, which is way over my head, where you can automatically track all this stuff. So these systems can be as complex as you want them to be or as simple as you need them to be. And so I think it's worth addressing real quickly, because we mentioned 12-week year, you know, what exactly is this before we get into the next section? This is something that we use kind of at Asian Efficiency when we do our quarterly planning, I would argue. You know, we don't set annual goals, we set quarterly goals, and then we work hard at those goals for the quarter. And then at the end of the quarter, we've got a chance to reset, learn from our mistakes, and try again if need be, which has happened a couple times. but that's the great part about it. You know, you're not just going nose down hard as you can, nose to the grindstone for an entire year. And then at the end of the year, you say, oh, well, I really shouldn't have been doing this for the last 10 months. You know, I should have noticed it right away and adjusted course. So that's the benefit of the 12-week year. Basically, how it works, if you're going to apply this personally, you would start with something like the Wheel of Life exercise Tan and I went through in a previous podcast, and you would identify the areas of your life that you're not happy with, okay? And then you're not going to try and fix everything. You're going to pick like the one thing that you want to focus on for the next quarter. Then you'll set some goals, which will move the needle in the right direction in that particular area. And then you break those down into the habits that you want to create to make sure that you get there. So something simple, like you want to write a book, for example, you would have a habit of showing up to write every day. Okay, maybe it's just writing for an hour. Maybe it's writing, you know, 300, 500, 1,000 words, whatever. But that's the thing that you want to focus on doing. And the idea being that you create these habits, those habits create the result that you're looking for.
Yeah, that's the thing about the 12-week year that I like is, first of all, like you said, it's a much shorter time frame, so you're really focused, but it's all centered around that idea of having things you do, habits that are tied to a specific goal, and then you're checking against that goal to see how you're doing. So it's not a surprise when you get to the end of that 12-week year. It's not a surprise whether you've quote-unquote met your goal or not, because you kind of know that going along the whole time.
Yep, exactly. So that's systems, and there's lots of other examples of productivity systems that are out there. Those are some of the more popular ones. Next is strategies. And strategies are kind of like maps that you can use to navigate through the busyness of your day. So these are kind of like simple frameworks that allow you to navigate potentially difficult situations with ease, and they can keep your day from getting thrown off track.
Yeah, and it's kind of like a level below systems, in the sense that whatever framework you're using, GTD, 12-week year, whatever you happen to be using, the strategies are those things that you do and ways that you approach things to help you execute against those systems.
Yeah, so strategies can be part of the systems. They don't necessarily need to be a part of a system. So, for example, a strategy might be something like Eat That Frog, where you're getting up and you're working on your most important task. That could also be coupled with something like the 12-week year or GTD, but it's not necessarily part of the 12-week year or GTD. And you can apply these strategies to lots of different things that you do. Maybe you absolutely hate email like I do, but you have to do it. It's a part of your job. Okay. Maybe you're in sales, and I know several salespeople who they tell me, you know, I have to have my inbox open all the time, because when I get an email asking for a proposal, if I wait 15 minutes, I'm not going to get that order. Okay. So that's understandable. There's some things that you just have to do whether you want to or not, and a strategy can help you do those things more effectively and more efficiently. We actually did a whole podcast episode on the Asian Efficiency email workflow, which is an example of a strategy.
Yeah, and one thing that you had said that I totally agree with is that if you see something that's getting off track all the time, like you find your email is just gets out of control, or you find that you're always late, or people in your around you are always late, or something like that. That's generally a good sign that you want to find some strategy that will help you deal with that challenge and get you sorted there. So that's a good way to look at it.
Yeah. So if I could say that maybe a little bit different way, identifying the pain points in your day-to-day work or life for that matter, and then figuring out strategies that you can implement to kind of deal with those things more efficiently so you don't have to worry about them.
Exactly. Or okay. At least they'll be less of a challenge.
Right, right. So some other examples of strategies, just kind of riffing off of that idea, Brooks, one of the things that I've been doing for a while, and it seems real simple, but it really does make a difference, is I set out my clothes for the next day, the night before, yep. So that when I get up in the morning, I can just go do my morning routine. And part of that, I'm going to get ready for my day. I don't have to think about and pick out, you know, what I'm going to wear today. Although most of the time it's just a t-shirt and jeans anyways. Rocking the Omni shirt today.
Nice.
But just having those things ready to go, you know, that's kind of an example of clear to neutral, I guess, which is another principle that we teach here at Asian Efficiency, which would be a strategy. The idea being that you want to make it as easy as possible to sit down and do your work. You want to deal with as much of the friction ahead of time as you can, because there's always going to be things that will try to derail your day. But a lot of times we're our own worst enemies and we allow these things to exist. And if we had a little bit of forethought, you know, we could deal with them before they would become an issue. And so that's where something like an evening routine can really help. And also a morning routine. And we've got, you know, podcast episodes on those particular topics. But I'm just curious, Brooks, do you have any other examples that you can think of different strategies that people could use?
Yeah, other examples that pop to mind are things like meal planning and batch cooking. You know, people might think, I want to eat healthier, but I just don't have time to cook and make a healthy lunch or something like that. Well, some strategies are figure out for the week what you're going to have, maybe use a meal delivery service or a meal prep service if that's something that would be helpful. And then if it makes sense, you know, just do a big batch cooking on the weekend. I know a lot of you referenced the dojo earlier, our online community. I know a lot of members do this where they just do a big batch on say a Sunday, and then they have their lunches set for the week. People like Tan from AE, I'm not sure he even knows where any of his cooking implements are, if he even has any. So he gets everything, all his meals and everything delivered. And whenever Mike and I go to visit him, there's boxes of deliveries coming all the time for his food. So that's what works for him. So that's an example that kind of solves the time thing a little bit.
Yeah, that's a great example. I had forgotten about that. You don't have to go all in with these things too. You can implement them on a smaller scale. My family has started using HelloFresh. You know, they're a sponsor of the podcast, but it's convenient every once in a while to have one of those meals that's ready to cook, and you still have to cook it, but it's way more efficient and way less of a cognitive load, I guess, is the best way to describe it. That sounds kind of weird, but I don't know. In the moment, you know, when you don't want to have to think about what you're going to cook, knowing that everything you need is right there, like that's a very comforting, and it helps you overcome the friction of, well, I don't want to make anything. Because at least in my family, like, we've been there, and when that happens, the alternative is like, well, I'll just go grab some, we'll order a pizza or whatever. And like, yeah, obviously that's not what we want to have happen there. So identifying like, how can we eat healthier? You know, we've got a couple meals a month that we get from HelloFresh. We don't even have a couple a week. We found that we weren't going through them that often. And so we have, when I called to say, you know, this isn't working, we're going to have to cancel. They're like, well, what if we delivered them every other week? I'm like, okay, yeah, actually, that'd be perfect.
I've heard of people, and you know, even if it's not a family situation, a lot of times people struggle with having the time and stuff like that to eat properly on the road. And I've heard of people even ordering meals and meal delivery and stuff like that to their hotel rooms when they're traveling. So they get those healthy meals delivered, or Amazon groceries or grocery delivery or whatever to a hotel, which is something I never thought of. I just heard of this recently, so that you're always set and you don't have to worry about that stuff.
That's a great idea. I never even thought about that, but yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Another thing that we do, we've got a half an acre of a yard, and it would take me, when I used to mow it myself, an hour and a half to mow it at least. And I didn't have the tools to do all the edging and make it look nice. So we found an old guy who is looking for something to do when he's in Wisconsin during the summers. He goes to Florida for the winter and he comes and mows it for like $30, I think. And he's done in 20 minutes because he's got one of those like big ones that you do the baseball fields with. But I'm able to buy back, you know, an hour and a half of my weekend every week that way, and you know, we can call him and be like, hey, it doesn't need it this week, you know, hold off, whatever. But that's one of those things where for a long time I was just like, this is what we have to do. You know, I never even considered finding somebody to mow the lawn for me, because it's like, oh, you so fancy that you can't mow your own lawn. Like, yes, I can mow my own lawn, but when you do the math, it's not worth it for me to do to mow my own lawn, because I don't enjoy doing it. It's something that I would very much rather give to somebody else, so that I have more time for the things that really make the difference, or more time for my family. And so, and
it's funny you say that. It's funny you say that, because that's something a lot of people struggle with, especially if they do enjoy doing it. That's when it gets tough. Some people like doing that sort of thing, or whatever the task is. Maybe it's doing laundry. Maybe it's you know, gourmet cooking or something like that. There's certain things people like doing, but it can get to the point where it doesn't really make sense for them to do it. So that's when it gets tough.
Yeah, and that's probably bleeding over a little bit into the next section with people. So let's maybe stick a pin in this conversation for now, and just talk about a couple other examples of strategies that you can use. So in episode, I think it's 188, I interviewed the creator of the Essington Glass, and that's like I called it Pomodoro 2.0. I've actually got one on my desk. I'm holding it up here so that the dojo audience, where we're recording the live video of this right now, can see what it looks like. But that thing's great, and that can help you focus on and do your work for a shorter period of time by, again, eliminating the friction that it takes to get started. Because with the Pomodoro method, you're really working for only 25 minutes. You know, there's a concept that we teach called solar flaring, where you kind of break it down into a smaller enough chunk where it's more of a pain to say, no, I'm not going to do this, than it is to just do the thing. The key phrase is, I will just. So I'm just going to go to the gym and walk on the treadmill for 5 minutes. But you know, once you get there, you know, that you kind of trick yourself, because once you get there, you know you're going to follow through and put in the rest of the effort. So that's kind of what the Pomodoro method is for any concentration heavy task, is kind of how I use it. So if I need to write, or I need to create a slide deck or things like that, that's kind of when I'll flip the Pomodoro method, just to get it started, let it go. And then often I find, like, once I get to the end of it, I'm in the zone. I don't want to stop, so I'll just keep going. But it's a simple strategy to get me started.
Yeah, especially for those tasks that you have to do, but you don't necessarily want to do. The Pomodoro method is a great way to kind of externalize it and be like, okay, I'm just going to, like you said, I will just do it until this thing, just go for it until this thing says I can stop for a bit, and then, you know, you get the ball rolling. So it's really powerful for that.
Yeah, it's kind of like a mental scaffolding where all of a sudden it doesn't seem as difficult for you to muster up the motivation to do this thing, because you've given yourself permission to quit after a short period of time. When all along, yeah, you could quit after a short period of time, but it's like, no, the Pomodoro method says after these 25 minutes, I get to take a break.
Exactly.
You know, and there's links to all of this stuff, including some other things, podcast episodes and blogs in the show notes for this episode. We've got lots of links to lots of different things for people who want to dive into some of these specific areas. Like I mentioned at the beginning, the goal of this podcast series is to help people kind of locate where are the levers that they need to pull for themselves. Everybody who comes to Agent Efficiency for productivity help is a little bit different, but all of the productivity solutions we've crafted over the years, you know, I argue that they would fall into one of these three different categories. So again, we want to provide like that mental scaffolding to point you in the right direction so that you can do the thing that really makes the difference. And we're going to actually have some action steps at the end of this. Thanks to LinkedIn for supporting the Productivity Show. When it comes to running your business, the right people are critical if you want to be successful. But where do you find that one person who's a perfect fit for your company? You could try traditional methods like posting on job boards, but how can you really be sure the person you want even sees your job? Fortunately, there's a better option available. Find the right person who will fit your business and help it grow with LinkedIn. As the world's largest professional network, people go to LinkedIn every single day to grow professionally and discover new job opportunities. In fact, 70% of the U.S. workforce is already on LinkedIn, so there's no better way to get your job listing in front of the right person than with a LinkedIn Jobs listing. LinkedIn Jobs matches potential candidates to the real requirements of your role based on more of who they really are, their skills, interests, even how open they are to new opportunities. This makes sure that your job gets seen by the right people, increasing the likelihood of hiring the right person, even if your ideal candidate isn't actively looking for another job right now. In fact, most LinkedIn members haven't recently visited the top job boards, but 9 out of 10 members still say they are open to new opportunities. So if you're looking for a way to reach people like this who can help take your organization to the next level, the only way to reach them is on LinkedIn. It's the reason a new hire is made every 10 seconds using LinkedIn, and businesses rate LinkedIn 40% higher than job boards at delivering quality candidates. If you're looking to fill an open position but can't afford to waste time and money hiring the wrong person, then go to linkedin.com/TPS and get $50 off of your first job post. That's linkedin.com/TPS to get $50 off your first job post. LinkedIn.com/TPS. Terms and conditions apply. Our thanks to LinkedIn for supporting the Productivity Show. But let's get into the next section here, which is people. We started talking about this a little bit with the delegation, but this can apply a lot of different ways. So some of it could be delegating things that you either shouldn't be doing or don't want to do, but also it could just be working with the people on your team. For an introvert like me, sometimes it's hard to work with other people.
Yeah, and this is something we hear a lot when we talk to members of the community, customers and stuff like that. We talk to them, and, you know, what are your productivity challenges? And a lot of them say, you know, I know what I need to do, but Janice in HR or Joe in accounting or whatever is always barging in my office asking questions, and it's just so hard to get the time to work on that.
Yeah, exactly. And that's the thing where you can't really control other people, and I would argue you don't really need to, nor should you aspire to. But that's the thing where quickly the switch gets flipped and you feel powerless and you're no longer in control of the situation, especially if you've got a manager or a boss, somebody above you who does not share the same productivity mindset. And we've recorded podcast episodes on that particular topic, like how do you make the people around you more productive? And it's a balancing act because, as Chris Bailey mentioned in the Productivity Project, the reason for productivity is people. In fact, I think it was Peter Drucker who said, you want to be efficient with things and effective with people. Okay. And those things I think are related. The bottom line though is that you don't want to make your interactions with the people that you work with as efficient as possible and avoid them as much as you can. What you want to do is you want to figure out a way to work with them effectively so that you can move together towards achieving your team goals, which is another aspect of this, which is somewhat difficult and unique to everybody's situation. You know, it's one thing to figure out the strategies and the systems that allow you to work efficiently, but it can be quite another thing to work efficiently and effectively as part of a team, especially a remote team. There's some specific challenges that remote teams have, but any team, this is something that you got to figure out.
Yeah. And it's all about, I mean, like you said, we've recorded podcasts on this, so there's a lot you could say about this, but a lot of it comes down to kind of setting expectations, providing clues. So for example, like Mike said, we're recording this on video and I can see Mike's wearing his beautiful Bose QC35 headphones. So there's, you know, the symbol of I've got my headphones on. That means that it's working time. It's all about using signals like that and kind of helping people learn the way they should be working with you and helping them know that by not interrupting you, by allowing you to focus, it's actually helping them. So a lot of times it's kind of hand-holding it in some ways.
Right. I forget which course it was, but I know that I was going through one of them by Curtis McHale. Maybe it was the Focus Time course that's in the dojo. And he was sharing a story about how when he worked in an open office environment, which he hated because his spot was basically moved to the middle of the room for enhanced collaboration, he bought big pink over-ear headphones. And he said a lot of the time he wasn't even listening to anything. He just put them on, and then when people would come to talk to him, he would purposely ignore them. the headphones gave him basically the mechanism in order to do that, because they would just basically think to themselves, oh, he's got these over-ear headphones on. He must not have heard me. My thing really isn't that urgent for Curtis. I'll go find somebody else who can help me with this. And he'll be the first to tell you that maybe he could have handled that with a little bit more tact. but it's an interesting strategy. And I think that there is definitely places that you can apply that. You don't have to be a jerk about it, but there is those visual cues that you can send people, like, don't interrupt me right now. That's one of the things that we figured out as a family. You know, I'm recording this in my office in the basement, and the kids know when the door is shut that you don't come in. When the door is open, then you come in. You can play with my Legos, whatever. I got these Clock Man and Calendar Man up here and pull them in front of the camera so people can see. You know, so my kids love to come and play with that stuff, but the visual cue is that the door is closed, and they know that, okay, so that's the boundary that's been set, so we have to modify the behavior accordingly. And with a little bit of intention and thought, you can create those boundaries to create the space that you need to do the work that you need to do. I would argue almost any situation, maybe even especially in a corporate situation where your boss will just walk into your office, if you thought about the boundaries that you could put up to create that space and create the time, I mean, that's what this whole episode is about creating time, creating that margin for the things that you really need to do, that you can get some immense benefit from that.
Because a lot of times people don't really think past the last the last 5 minutes. And what I mean by that is, you know, yesterday your boss might have asked you, hey, I really need you to compile these reports and or have this slide deck ready or something like that. But that was yesterday. And today your boss is walking in and saying, hey, did you see that email from so-and-so? Blah, 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 blah. And they kind of forget that they asked you to do this really important thing. And so a lot of times, and of course it depends on the person, depends on the relationship, all that sort of thing. I understand that. I worked in corporate for a very long time, so I know how it works. But a lot of times people are way more receptive than you think to strategically asking, okay, yeah, I can definitely look into this email, but what takes priority, the email or the report you asked me to do yesterday? And a lot of times people just don't even think about that conflict, whereas to you it's obvious. And so a lot of times what we do is we just kind of grit our teeth and be like, oh man, my boss just interrupts me all the time, blah blah blah. Where sometimes, not always, but sometimes if you're able to have that conversation, you can make more strategic and better uses of your time.
Yeah, exactly. I'm glad that you called that out, because it's a really important point. You know, if people don't have the same mindset, you can't expect them to see things the same way. I think we tend to judge other people by their actions and ourselves by our intentions. Mm-hmm. So when someone without a productivity mindset just pops into your office to follow up with the email that was sent 10 minutes ago to say, hey, did you see this? When you look at that, because you listen to the productivity show and you understand how disruptive that is, you're like, you obviously don't want me to get anything done. But they're not thinking that at all. They're just trying to get an answer to a problem that they're trying to solve, you know? And so I think that giving people the benefit of the doubt, so to speak, maybe that's not the exact right way to say that, but that can definitely help you see things better. It's less emotional. You get a little bit more emotional distance from the situation when you're able to see it that way. When you don't attribute intention to the action when people disrupt your day, and then you can deal with it more effectively. I also think that when it comes to working with people, communication is very, very important. Most of the work issues that I've experienced in the different teams that I've been involved with can come back to ineffective communication. Now, depending on your position in the organization, there's certain things you can do, there's certain things you can't do, but when you are in a management position or you are over other people as a leader, let's say, I would say that you should do everything that you can to make sure that you communicate effectively. And if people don't understand the vision that you're trying to communicate, that is not on them, that is on you. Okay, now if your boss comes in and just throws something at you and you misunderstand it, maybe you should ask more questions or something like that. But ultimately, like, the responsibility lands on the people further up the food chain, if that makes sense.
Well, it definitely depends, like you say, it depends on the communicator. And yeah, I've seen and you know, a lot of them have been my fault too, frankly, that, you know, I wanted something done and it was so obvious to me because it was in my mind. You know, you can visualize what it looks like, but it's not, the other people can't read your mind, and we often forget that. Tan we do these internal team trainings every 2 weeks at AE, and he did a great one on delegation, and that a big part of it at the beginning he talks about is making sure that vision is crystal clear, that the people know what it is you want them to do, not just the steps that, you know, not just deliver X, Y, Z, but be crystal clear at the beginning what it is that you're looking for, because then that helps them make decisions as they're executing on the acceptance criteria, as we would say.
Yep. Yeah. Once they know exactly what's expected of them, then they can run after it and they can execute it. I would also say that if you find yourself in a position where your leader is not communicating as effectively maybe as they could, that you can still solve a lot of potential issues for both of you if you will accept the responsibility for making the communication more effective and not just attributing blame because, oh, well, they really wanted this project done, they should have explained it better. You know, if you've got questions, ask those questions because it's not just the other person that is going to be affected by this. It is ultimately going to be you. And so do what you can, control what you can control. Ultimately, that's what a lot of productivity comes down to, is you want a little bit more control. Okay, so control comes with responsibility. When you take responsibility for your own schedule and you start being intentional with how you're attributing your time, you'll find that, you know, there's a lot of things that you can control. One of the most interesting exercises that I've ever done is to make a list of the things that you can control and the things that you can't control. And when you do it with, especially like work things, where some of the things, you know, you have people above you who are doing things and making decisions, and maybe they're not involving you in all the decisions, whatever, like, that doesn't matter. Just make the list. And the outcome for me anyways was that there's a lot more things that you can control than you realize in the moment, because you get so caught up and so emotional, fight versus flight, you know, that, oh, they're doing this to me, you know, and that's all you can see. But when you make those lists, it really does help you to see things with the right perspective.
Oh, that's interesting. I'm going to have to try that. Some feedback from the dojo. So we record live with the dojo, as Mike said. So Phil is saying that he's beginning to appreciate the value of having a new mindset at work. For him, he often unwinds, in his words, too quickly and easily by interacting with others, but could shave some of the time off with a new mindset and get some stuff done. Yeah, that is true. When you're especially in a workplace, it's a little different in a remote team. But when you're in a workplace and you're friendly with colleagues, you can definitely waste a lot of time. Though I will say that don't ignore the productivity benefits of building relationships with the people around you, the people you work with, because that can pay off big time over time if you make sure that you do at least try to build relationships with the people around you. But of course, it's a fine line, as always.
Right, right. And Tammy mentions, I like this. In the afternoon, I've started asking people who come by with the, do you have a minute to come walk with me? I was going to take the 10 to 15 minute walk anyway. And this way, I'm able to answer whatever they need without interrupting my focus time. I love that. I really like the concept of these walking meetings. I mean, if you back up even a little bit, like the standing meetings, the principle there is that if you make people stand for these meetings, then they're going to be shorter because they're not going to just go off on tangents and make it take forever. And I think walking meetings are even more like that principle applies. But I love walking meetings. I find it actually when you walk and you're making a decision that you think more clearly and you get more ideas. If you're ever to watch me during one of our meetings, I'm usually pacing back and forth in my office with my AirPods in as we're talking about, like, especially like the strategy meetings. Yep. I think that's a great tip.
Yeah, West Wing style. Steve Jobs famously had a lot of his big meetings. He would take people for walks through the hills near his house. So that's definitely a great strategy.
Awesome. And there's other things that apply here. We won't get into all the details. Marmel and I recorded an episode on how we implement Scrum here at Asian Efficiency, but Scrum is kind of the working model that we use. That's maybe a hybrid here. It could fall under people, and we've got links to things which have to do with Scrum, including the episode that I recorded with Lucas Smith, who is a professional Scrum master. So there are lots of great tips on working with a team productively from that episode. But Scrum is also a system. It just happens to apply specifically to teams. So we've been going for a while. Let's shift focus here and make this stuff actionable. So as I mentioned at the beginning, this is pillar one time. And the three different areas here are systems, strategies, and people. Now, why should you care about this? Well, you should care about this if time is the thing that you need to improve. Okay, so the three pillars of productivity, the T framework we mentioned at the beginning. I really like the analogy of like a three-legged stool. You have to have all three of these in order to support you. If even one of those legs is wobbly, you're going to fall on your face. And so if you identify that time is the thing that you need to improve, then you don't have to worry about the other stuff right now. Okay, you can just focus on the one thing that's going to make the difference. And all of a sudden, it's a lot more attainable than trying to fix all the things and apply all the different life hacks and create the life that somebody else is living because they did X, Y, Z and 50 other things. And this is all you got to do. And then you get the same results. Doesn't work that way. Everything's got to be custom, but you can identify the bucket that you should be choosing your potential solutions from. So we've got a list of questions here on how to know if you should be looking to optimize your time.
Yeah. So the first one is, do you have trouble getting everything done? So even if you're a master at making your to-do list, you follow whatever framework you have and you've got your great to-do list, do you have trouble actually getting it done by the end of the time that you thought you would?
Yep, that's a great question. Next one would be, do things take longer than they should? And this is probably related to the first one. I would say most people make a list of things and they don't get everything done. It's usually because they're underestimating how long things are going to take. And some of that is trial and error. But if you consistently underestimate how long something is going to take, which is the natural way to view the things that you have to do, I would argue, you kind of picture this ideal scenario where everything is just going to go perfectly, but that's almost never the case. Okay. So when that happens, when things take longer than they should, then it contributes to you not being able to get everything done.
Yep. The next question is, do you have trouble working with others? And, you know, this is a loaded question, but we're specifically referring to in relation to getting things done, getting tasks done, and having the time to do the things you want to do on.
Right. And remember, if you have trouble working with others, assume the responsibility for yourself and fix the problems. That way it's going to go a lot better for you. Don't show up and be like, hey, boss, you have a problem.
Yeah.
Next one, how much do you work on the things that are important to you versus other things that pop up? This kind of ties back to the Eisenhower matrix, you know, the urgent versus important, which we talked a little bit about. Really what you want to do is you want to create the time to work on the things that are important, but not urgent. A lot of times when people are dealing with time issues, they get stuck on the urgent side of that matrix. And even the things that are not important, but they appear urgent, those are things that get done. But the things that are important, but not urgent, things like family time, things like going to the gym, I mean, insert whatever the thing is that's going to get you to your goal. Those are the things that you either don't do or do sporadically.
Yep. The next one is, do you create a written plan for your day or your week? So what we mean by that is, When you're starting the day, do you know what it is that you want to be working on, or are you kind of looking around for things to do and just doing whatever comes up?
Yep. And then the next one, I'm going to do these actually flip flop these. Do you get to the end of the day and feel like the day has just passed you by? We call this day gone by syndrome, and this definitely applied to me. Now, what's interesting about this situation? I've read a lot of books, and the one that I read recently is The Happiness Advantage by Sean Acor. And he talks about how people who are unhappy will typically, and I forget exactly how he described it, but especially for higher functioning like executives, they will they're especially susceptible to this, okay, because they're working crazy hours, 14, 16 hour days. But he said that if you watch them work, they're really not getting much work done. And we kind of, I think, all understand that intellectually, but in the moment, it's easy to fall into this where it's like, well, I've just been going all day. But if you look back at like, which was the other question here, how do you actually spend your time? You really only got a couple hours of work done, which is why something like the Pomodoro method, to go back to that, if you do 8 Pomodoros in a day, that's 4 hours of work, but that's 4 hours of focused work. You're going to be much more productive than the average person who's working 8 or even 10 hour days.
Yep. And yeah, like you said, do you know how you actually spend your time? What you think you're doing and what you're actually doing are often two very different things. And that can be really, really enlightening in a good way, but usually in a not so good way.
Well, knowledge is power, you know, thinking back to when I was a kid, the big cartoon that was on was G.I. Joe, and they would always have like the little life lessons at the end. And the tagline was, now you know, and knowing is half the battle. Yep. So that's really where you got to start going into action steps now. The first thing that you should do is you should figure out how you are actually spending your time. And I think you put in here that screen time in iOS 12 is going to be a game changer for this. Maybe I put that in. I don't remember. I really like screen time. I've been using it myself. I think this is really, really cool. And I totally agree that this is something that is going to throw this in people's faces. And they're going to, when they first see this, they're going to be shocked. They're going to say, no way do I spend an hour a day on Facebook and 30 minutes on Twitter, whatever. And those numbers are probably pretty low for some people, even people who are listening to this. But there's other tools that you can use too. So Rescue Time, for example, Timing. We've got a discount for Timing in the Dojo for Dojo members. I love that app. I love it because it runs in the background on your Mac and you never have to do anything with it. Rescue Time I know does too. But Timing gives a lot better reports in my opinion, and there's no subscription tied with it. It's part of the SetApp service. So if you use SetApp, which I've tried to convince everybody to join, I just think it's such a great value. There's some great apps in there, including Ulysses, BusyCal, iStat menu, stuff like that. This isn't a setup episode, but Timing is included in there as well.
Yeah. It was me that mentioned the screen time. And the reason why is because all the the apps that you mentioned, you know, timing, toggle, all those things, they're really awesome. But generally, people will only install them, and then even a smaller subset of people will actually use them if they already think they have an issue and they're looking to solve the problem. Whereas, like you said, the screen time is built into iOS 12, and it's going to, I believe, is going to really surprise people who weren't even really realizing that they had an issue or could be doing things a little better, perhaps.
Yeah, and you can sync your screen time statistics with all of your different devices. I prefer to keep mine separate because I tend to use my iOS devices. Well, actually, all my devices have kind of a different use case. So my iPhone is typically where I will waste time. And so 3 hours of iPhone time is very different than 3 hours of iPad time, because typically iPad time, I'm writing in Ulysses full screen. I've got the keyboard cover on it. And so one of my favorite things to do is to go to a coffee shop, grab just my iPad, and go write for a while. But if you did use like Macs at home and PCs at work, which I know a lot of our audience does, then all of your Apple devices will sync with the screen time, including your Mac. Next action step then, or question to ask, is there anything that you can stop doing? I just got back, as we're recording this, from my personal retreat, which I do every quarter. And we have a whole episode devoted to that, but there's three specific questions that I noodle on while I'm out in the wilderness. What should I start doing, stop doing, and keep doing? As it pertains to freeing up time, what can you stop doing? This is the one, obviously, that's going to make the difference. And don't gloss over the importance of this question. Not quite sure how to say this. Like, this is a bigger deal than it seems at first. You can, in my experience, if you think about this long enough, you can definitely find things that you can stop. The first time that I addressed this question, I thought, because I set aside an entire day for my personal retreat, for the first couple hours, I couldn't think of anything that I could stop doing. Okay. But as I'm like, well, no, I got to pick something, you know, I ended up with like three or four things that I could stop doing. But it took a little while to get to that point before I saw those things.
Yeah. There's always a little bit of low hanging fruit, but then once you really start thinking about it, that's when the big difference will happen.
Yep.
Okay. So the next question to ask is there anything you can delegate to someone else? And we've talked about this a little bit. There's things like, you know, maybe you have a team that there's certain things is not really appropriate for you to be doing. Maybe it would be better for someone else, and maybe they would even like doing it more. Could also be things like we talked about, meal delivery, that sort of thing, laundry, having your lawn done. Phil in the dojo shared a tool that I wasn't familiar with called AirTasker, which is kind of like TaskRabbit in the United States is another one, where there's certain things, even things like putting together IKEA or hanging pictures or whatever it is. There's somebody who can do that a lot a lot better and faster than you. So why not make it better for everyone? But the key to delegation, and this is something we talk about a lot internally as well, is you want to delegate to somebody, but you don't want to abdicate. So the idea Yep. of delegation is not, I want to get this off my plate. So, hey, you over there, you go do this. No, even if you're getting somebody else to do it, if it's something important, obviously, you still need to be involved in making sure that, we talked about earlier, the vision, making sure that the person is supported and is guided, even if they're the ones doing the actual task.
Yeah, exactly. You're still responsible for the outcome, even if somebody else is helping you achieve it.
Yep.
And then the last question, I like this question a lot. If you had more time, what is the one thing that you would do? And then the next step for that is to schedule that and to put that on your calendar. So if you are planning your week, going back to the questions for locating whether you should be looking to optimize your time, the whole principle of the big rocks, putting those things in first, otherwise you're not going to have time for them. So maybe the one thing that you want to do is you do want to get to the gym consistently. This is something that I did. I recognized that I was not getting to the gym consistently. I was trying to go during my lunch break, but sometimes things would get so busy at the office that I wouldn't be able to go. So I'm trying to think like, well, how can I make sure that I get there consistently? I put it on my calendar and then everything gets planned around it. So maybe it's not going to the gym, maybe it's something else, but the principle still applies. Make sure that the thing that you really want to do goes on your calendar first, and somehow you will magically, and I use air quotes there, but this is my experience, you know, when you put those things on your calendar, somehow everything else still works. I don't know why it must be like a psychological thing. We think like we're bigger than we really are, where people are counting on us for this thing. And we find out when we implement this strategy that if we're not able to help somebody with something, somehow it gets done anyways and everything's fine, you know, but we're less stressed when we do it. So why not implement this way?
Yeah, it's like investing in that concept of paying yourself first. If you have that X percent that you want to invest and take it off your paycheck so you never even see it, the rest of your life will still manage, because it's just all the rest of your money goes around it. In this case, you're investing time in the things that you really want to have happen.
We know how frustrating it can be when you're overwhelmed. We know what it's like to have too much to do and not enough time to do it in. But you don't have to stay there. We've helped over 13,000 people make time for what's important to them and take action on their goals. So if you're tired of never having enough time, you feel stuck, or you need a little extra help defeating the obstacles that stand between you and your ideal future, take just a couple of minutes and complete our online productivity quiz. In just a couple of minutes of your time, you can get a personalized plan to help you get unstuck and on your way to achieving success without the stress. To take the quiz, just go to theproductivityshow.com/quiz. Again, that URL is theproductivityshow.com/quiz. It's only going to take a couple minutes of your time, and you'll get results which will show you the biggest areas for improvement, and you'll get several curated resources to help you overcome the resistance that is keeping you from achieving your full potential. You can also find links to everything that we discussed today in the show notes by going to theproductivityshow.com/219. If you enjoyed this episode, please consider leaving us an iTunes review or a star in Overcast. The show is on Twitter as @productivityfm, and if you want to get your questions answered or get mentioned on the show, you can send us a tweet with the hashtag AskTPS. Thanks for joining us, and we'll see you next Productive Monday.